Welcome to the Infinite Consciousness This Week, and thanks for listening. Today we have with us Dr. Christopher Vasey, a naturopath from Switzerland, and we're going to be talking about two things tonight, the acid alkaline diet and the water prescription, two books that Christopher has out. How are you, Christopher?
I'm fine, Eva. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. I know we had to wake you up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right.
So before we get started, why don't you just tell people where they can find your information, your website, and a little bit about you, and then we'll get into the interview.
All right, yeah. Well, I live in Switzerland in a very nice place along Lake of Geneva, and I studied naturopathy in a French school in Paris. And then I started to practice to take care of different people, and a lot of interest was there about natural medicine, and I started to give courses to people interested. And those courses brought me to write books on the subject. And one of these books has been several of those books have been now translated in English and are published by Inner Tradition, an American publisher. So there is the acid alkaline diet we're going to talk about, the water prescription, the whey prescription, and the detox mono diet. But you'll find all that on the website of Inner Tradition, which is innertradition.com, traditions with an S at the end. Or I also have a website, and the name of the website is my name. It's christophervasey.ch, CH for Switzerland. You've got a presentation of all my books and a little bit of myself.
And Vasey, it's Christopher, C-H-R-I-S-C-O-P-H-E-R, and Vasey's V-A-S-E-Y.
Yes.
And then C-H, did you say?
Yes, C-H. Yep.
C-H.com?
No, dot C-H, and that's it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep.
And do you have an email in case somebody wants to email you?
Yeah, it's C-H.Vasey. At vtx.ch.
Okay. So let's get right into this because you have some really important material, in my opinion. Let's talk about the acid alkaline diet and pH first. Tell us, when we talk about pH, and you know, we've all heard that before, is pH the same over the entire body, or is each organ and system different?
Well, there are slight differences from one part of the body to the other, but usually what we say is that the internal environment of the body, that is all the liquids which are in the body, the blood and the liquids outside the cells and inside the cells, have the same pH, which is 7.39, or should we say 7.4.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a general measure for the whole of the internal environment. And if the body has this pH, then it is healthy because everything will work very well. I mean, all the enzymes which are responsible for all the biochemical activity in the cells will be doing their work efficiently, which means the cells and the organs will function well, and we as a whole, we will function also well and be healthy. The problem is when one loses the balance between the acid and the alkalines, then sicknesses arises. And there are two ways in which we can lose this balance. One is that the alkalines take the upper hand, but that's very, very rare, and it's not the subject of my book. The other situation is very common. Our body gets acidic. We acidify our body with the way we live and the diet we follow.
How do you know if a particular system is off or if your pH is overall off?
There are different ways of doing it. In my book, I give a list of sicknesses which arise when the pH gets acidic in the body. There's a whole list, and usually a person who is acidic will have several of those sicknesses, not necessarily all at the same time, sometimes one after the other, sometimes two or three together, depends. That's one way of doing it. Another way, which is quite fun to use, is to measure your urine pH. Because normally the body always eliminates acids, and this gives the urine a pH of 7. In natural medicine, we say 7 to 7.5. In allopathy, in the ordinary medical approach, they say it's more like 6.5. But let's take 7, as we're more in natural medicine. If the body is getting very acidic, because a lot of acid are eaten or produced by the way of living, then it will try and eliminate more acids, and that will give a pH to the urines which is under 7, so 6.5 or 6 or 5.5 and so on. So one way of discovering if someone is acidic is to measure, the person can measure his urine pH.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very easy to do because you put a little urine on the reactive paper. Yeah, you need a reactive paper to measure that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the usual way of doing it.
I actually bought some at the drugstore the other day, and it was like $1 for a whole bottle of them. So they're not hard for people to get if you just go to the drugstore.
Yeah, that's true. That's really very quite cheap and available. And you put urine on the paper, and it will react, and the reaction is a change of color. And you can compare the color it has, once it has reacted, with a color scale, and find the in the scale the position where the colors are the same. And there you'll have a figure which will give you the pH of your urine or any product that you want to test.
Mm-hmm.
But the product must be in mixed it with water. It must be a solution, can't be dry.
Okay.
So, and the person has to do it like that. Every time the person lets urine come out of his body, he will measure it, so it's maybe 6 or 10 times a day, and then he can see that the measure is always around 7, which is good, so the person is probably not acidic, or all the measures are more under, so 6.5, sometimes 6, sometimes 5. The figures can change quite a lot from one moment of the day to the other. It depends what we eat, if we're tired, and so on.
Why do you think, Wes, in your book, you list a lot of problems that are caused from in every part of your body, from your mental condition to sinus problems to teeth problems and muscle pains and arthritis. Why do you think Western medicine doesn't look at this? I mean, I know I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but I have to ask you that question.
Yes. Probably it's too simple. But I think they haven't understood what really happens when someone gets acidic. Because what we can read in books, physiology books, is that when the body has too much acid, the blood will give bicarbonate to buffer, to neutralize the acid. And, well, that's it. We can, most people deduct from that that the body can defend itself and there's no problem left. But in fact, if someone has a very acidifying way of living, all day long, several times a day, his body will have to give, well, first his blood will have to give him alkaline minerals to neutralize the acids. But when those minerals will be used, then the blood will need more to be able to neutralize the acids. And that's when something which is not well enough known, those minerals are taken in the body tissues, so in the muscles, in the joints, in the nerves, the hair, and that's why the whole body will demineralize because of that acidifying process. So the body loses a lot of minerals, and problem arises in different organs.
I think this is one of the most important things in health there is, and so many people don't know about it. One thing I wanted to ask you, just because you think a food is acidic in nature, for example, a lemon, doesn't necessarily mean that it metabolizes that way, does it?
I didn't understand the beginning of your question, sorry.
You know how some foods you think that they're acidic, like lemons.
Yes.
But when you eat them, it doesn't necessarily mean that it metabolizes to...
No, that's true, yeah. That's very important. Lemon and vinegar, too, they belong to a special category of foods, because usually when we talk about acid and alkaline, or you read something in the book, it gives you two lists, the acidifying foods and the alkalizing foods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, from my point of view, a mistake, because they're the third group, which is all the foods which are acids, which have an acidic taste, like fruits and vinegar. And those acids are weak acids. And usually, for most people, these acids are oxidized, which means they are transformed in something else and gives alkaline substances. So for most people, lemon juice, for example, or people who follow a lemon cure, or vinegar cure also, will oxidize those acids and receive a lot of alkalines to neutralize acids. But the problem is that not everybody can oxidize these weak acids from fruits and vinegar. And for this second category of people, they will drink lemons thinking, I'm going to get a lot of alkaline minerals with that. But as they can't oxidize those acids, the acids will stay acids, and these people will have a lot of acid coming into their body because of the lemon. And it will have the opposite results they're looking for. Instead of alkalizing their body, it will acidify the body.
So
that's a special category, and some people metabolize well those weak acids, but others don't. And that's very important to know.
So how do they know if they're the latter group, the ones that don't metabolize it properly?
Well, usually, one way of discovering it is just to think about a period where, in the past, where the person has eaten a lot of this kind of food. I mean, maybe it was the season of strawberries and ate a lot of strawberries or tomatoes, which are acid. And just to think if his condition was better or worse. For example, if the person gets sick every time he eats too many fruits or vinegar and so forth, then it's a person who is very sensitive to weak acids.
Okay.
But if the person feels much better, then it's fine. He oxidizes well, and he can go on eating fruits. That's the way, by experiencing. Or if someone can't remember any situation, he can just try. Just if you drink a lot of orange juice, if your joint problems get worse, then it's for sure you're very sensitive to weak acid, and it's better not to take those kind of foods.
You brought up the topic of vinegar. A lot of people say that it's good for you to take a tablespoon or two of vinegar every day. Is that true?
Well, here again, it depends on who is going to take the vinegar. If it's someone who can metabolize well the acids from the weak acid from vinegar, then it's fine. Otherwise, it's better not to take too much of it. Or even for some people to cut it out completely. I mean, people who are very sensitive with weak acids.
Does cooking foods change the acid alkaline levels?
Of fruits, you mean, for example?
Food in particular. Does it change it? Does it matter if it's raw or cooked?
No, it doesn't make a big difference, no.
Okay. Are there any supplements that assist with the alkaline balance?
Yes, they are. As the body gives alkaline minerals to neutralize the acid, that's the system that the body uses to defend itself against acids. And those minerals are calcium, sodium, potassium, and so forth.
Well, tell me that list again.
Calcium, potassium, magnesium, and so forth. These minerals, someone thought of had the idea to prepare a mixture with those minerals to give to people who are too acidic to help their body fight against the acids. And here in Europe, we've got more than a dozen preparation, which are all nearly the same in general, which are used to fight against acidifying of the body. And the only product I know in the United States is Alkalize Blue. The name of the product is Alkalize Blue, mm-hmm. and it's produced by PH Yon Company, and they've got a website, ph-yon.com.
How do you spell that second word?
Yon, I-O-N.
Oh, Ion, okay.
Ion, sorry.
Sorry, yeah. southern drawl that I have, sorry.
So those powders are very useful because one way of helping someone get rid of all his acid is to change the way he eats, and that's an important point. But sometimes they need an extra help, and most people need an extra help, and taking those products like Alkalize Blue, which are alkaline supplements, is really a big help. The way to take them is very important because you've got to dose them correctly. Not that it is dangerous to take too much, but usually people to take too little. The way to dose them is to take as much of the powder as necessary for to raise the pH of the urine up to 7 again. I mean, usually someone who is acidic will have a pH, urine pH of maybe 5.5 or 6, under 7. So if he takes 3 times a day a teaspoon of this powder with water, his pH will raise a bit, but he's got to increase the dose until the moment where the pH has reached 7. And that's then the quantity which is necessary for that person to help his body really de-acidify. And he can go on taking those powders for months. It takes quite a long time to get rid of the acids which are in the depth of the tissues. It can take 6 months to 1 year, but
really?
It's really worth it because the person can feel a big transformation and his health improves a lot.
Do you see any particular kinds of diseases that present more than others due to acidic balance?
Yeah, one is tidiness. People are always people who are acidic are very tired usually, or very quickly tired. And if they make a great effort, mental or physical, they will take a long time to get over it and recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing, this constant lack of strength to go forward in life. And with that, there is also a lack of psychic tone. They don't have a psychic drive. They are not so enthusiastic as other people.
Mm-hmm.
It can even go towards a slight depression. They're a bit depressive.
Really?
But other problems like skin problems, people who have dry skin, dry eczema, or cracks in the skin, are people who are have an acidic internal environment. But there's a whole list in my book of those kind of problems which can arise. Joint problems are very often related with acidic condition.
You mean things like arthritis?
Yes,
and gout?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And can I just add something?
Absolutely.
When someone changes his way of eating and takes those alkaline supplements and doses it correctly, the pains which are always there when there's a arthritis or other problems like that,
mm-hmm.
the pain can go get away quite quickly. It's taking alkaline supplement can help the joints to get better, but it will also help to get rid of the pains. The more acidic someone is, the bigger are the pains. So the contrary is also true. The less acidic, the less of the pains.
Well, that's certainly a big problem that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
What about cancers?
Well, that's not typical of a problem which arises from the an acidic pH environment.
Okay, that's good.
No, not directly. I mean, no.
Uh-huh. What about the autonomic nervous system? Does it affect that at all?
Yes, the nerves are very affected because, as we said just before, the minerals which are alkaline, which are used to neutralize the acids, are calcium, potassium, magnesium, which are all minerals which the nervous system needs to function well. But if someone is very acidic, then he will lose a lot of those minerals, and then the nervous system will not function as well as it should.
I would imagine that, have you ever heard of restless leg syndrome?
Yes.
Does it have anything to do with that too?
Yeah, it could, because the person is too, well, the nerves are the problem, and they need a better nervous system, and that de-acidifying could help them in that way, yeah.
And what about sugar substitutes like aspartame and Splenda and things like that?
Well, I don't know if we've got the same as you have, but some of it's more on the side of acidifying the body than not. But while we're on the subject of sugar, because sugar is a big problem here in Europe, but probably in America too.
Yes, it is.
White sugar, refined sugar, which we find everywhere in biscuits, food, every kind of food, that's very acidifying. White sugar, refined sugar is very, it's not a food, in fact. It's just something man has produced. But because in nature, sugar is always associated with vitamin, minerals, which help the sugar to be digested and metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's not the case with white sugar, which is only sugar and nothing else, it is well not, when someone eats a lot of it, it's not well metabolized and it gives a lot of acids. So the best thing is not to cut off all the white sugar you can in your diet.
Could you give us a few? I know this book is really a good book, by the way. I really thought it was a helpful book. So just a reminder, it's called The Acid Alkaline Diet. Could you give the listeners some ideas of the best foods that they should eat to get more alkaline?
Well, the foods which are alkalizing are all the vegetables. So all the green vegetables like salad leaves, so lettuces, dandelion, and, well, all of them. And all the vegetables with colors, so carrot, beetroots, radishes, mm-hmm. and so forth. Vegetables, on the whole, are always alkalizing, and people should eat a lot of them, cooked or raw or in juice. It's always good. There's only one exception. It's tomatoes. But tomatoes are not a vegetable. Usually we say it's a vegetable, but in fact it's a fruit.
Right.
And it is like fruits. It's acid and can give problems to some people. But all the other vegetables are fine and people should eat. Well, the vegetables should form a big part of the diet of the person, the people with those problems. And also part of these alkalizing foods are potatoes, of course, not French fries or chips,
right?
Full of salt and oil, but a potato cooked with water or in the oven or with vapor. How do you say it?
Steamed.
Steamed
in the States.
Steamed potatoes cooked like that. That's really very alkalizing. People who have, it's quite well known for potatoes because people who have too much acid in their stomach usually take potato juice to neutralize the acids. So that's why many people know potatoes are good for that. And also chestnuts and almonds. Almonds are very good also to alkalize. So those foods should represent maybe 60, 70, or depending, 80% of the quantity of foods which the person eats. And the rest of it will be foods which are acidifying, but which you can't go without. I mean, all the proteins are acidifying foods, like meat, fish, cheese, eggs are acidifying, but you can't go out without protein. So, but if the proportions are good, a smaller quantity of proteins than alkalizing foods, then the person is on the safe side.
How does it affect the enzyme activity in your body?
Well, when the pH becomes acid, the environment of the enzyme is not correct anymore, so they slow down. They can't work as efficiently, they slow down or stop or start doing something else, which is not their usual work. So, but the general idea, they slow down. They can't do as much work and as efficiently as they should. So the first thing which people will notice is the energy production will slow down. They will have less energy.
Mm-hmm.
But then other problems arise because enzymes are busy everywhere doing everything, so everything can go wrong after that. Yeah.
You talk in your book about draining the acids. How do you do that?
Yeah, the acids are, well, the body doesn't just stay passively and looks at all those acids coming into the body and disturbing the whole system. The body reacts and tries to get to neutralize the acids, we've talked about that, and then to get rid of the acids. And the two main excretory organs which are responsible for this elimination are the kidneys and the skin. Those two organs eliminate toxins diluted in water. So the important thing is that the person who is too acidic should drink enough water and that his kidneys and skin works well. So for the kidneys, drinking a lot of water helps them to work, but it is also possible to take plants which help the kidneys to filter more acids out of the blood to get rid of, to eliminate them to the outside of the body.
What kind of plant?
Like dandelion.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good for the kidneys. Or hawkweed.
You mean like in breads, grain breads?
No, I mean you make a herbal tea. I didn't say that. You buy plants, which herbals, medicine herbs,
okay,
which are meant to help the kidneys to function better. And here again, it's important to have to dose well. When someone takes those plants, which are called diuretics plants,
mm-hmm,
he should dose the plants in the liquids so as to get an effect. If he just puts a small teaspoon in a liter, it won't do much good because it's not enough. He must follow the instructions which are given by the person who sells them. I've got all the figures in my book. And then if the dose is correct, then the person can feel he must urine more often in the day. The quantities are bigger because those plants act, they have an action on the kidneys, which gets rid of the extra water which stagnates in the tissues.
Mm-hmm.
The urine will take a darker color, have a it's not perfume, I don't know how you say it, the odor.
Odor.
The odor will be stronger because there will be more toxin in it.
Mm-hmm.
One has always to dose to see that it does something on that at that level. So that's the way of draining the acid by the kidneys. And for the skin, the way of doing it is to use amine or another to make the person sweat. So it can be a hot bath or sauna or exercise or something else.
Okay.
Sweating is a way of getting rid of a lot of acids. And people who are very acid can see it because in the places on the blood, on the body where the sweat will not evaporate very quickly because it's under the, in the armpits or under the wristwatch, under the watch, the sweat will not evaporate directly and will stay longer and attack the skin. And the skin is usually red in those places. Okay. For people who are very acidic.
What about inflammation? You know, like things like prostatitis and just chronic inflammation. Does it have anything to do with that?
I'm not sure that I understood your question.
Chronic, this acid-alkaline balance and chronic inflammation.
Inflammation?
Mm-hmm. Does it affect inflammation? You know, like, for example, prostatitis. Or what other kind of inflammation that somebody might have, colds and things like that. Does it, you know, just inflammation that you have in your body. Maybe joint inflammation, candida, things like that.
Yeah, inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I thought inflammation, I couldn't get it.
Oh.
Sorry. Yeah, inflammation, that's something typical of a acidic internal environment. The acids are aggressive, they attack the tissues. Just to get the idea, if you cut, you've got a small cut on a finger and you drop a little milk on it, with milk is alkaline,
mm-hmm.
you won't feel anything or not much. But if you drop vinegar or lemon juice, you will see that acids are very aggressive. And they're aggressive outside of the body, but also inside. So the more acids are in the body, the more inflamed the tissues get.
Okay.
Of course, one tissue will be more acid than the others because, for example, the skin or the joints depends on the person. Everybody makes its own thickness in his weak points. But the more acid, the more it gets inflamed, and the more the pain, the bigger the pain.
You talked about water. How much? How does one determine how much is the right amount for them to drink?
Well, the usual way of dealing with that is that every day we eliminate a certain quantity of urine, and we sweat another a certain quantity, and urine we eliminate around a liter and a half. Is it all right if I speak in liters?
Sure.
Yeah, good. I couldn't do it in another way, but because I'm used to this system. And then every day we sweat about half a liter or 8 deciliters. And the breath moisture we eliminate by the lungs is a bit less than a liter, a half a liter. And through the intestines, we also eliminate water, but only 100 grams. So if we add all that, it sums up to 2.5 liters.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is we should drink around 2.5 liters to replace what we've lost in the day. But a 2.5 liter, we don't have to necessarily drink that much because when we eat foods like vegetables or fruits, they are composed at 95% of water. So we get water with what we eat also. But the general intake of water in a day should be around 2.5 liters. I know some people say 3 or 4 liters or 5 liters, but it gets a bit too much from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true that the more someone eats salty and badly, too much sugar, meat, and eats too much in general, the more he has to drink because he will need more water to eliminate all the toxins which are brought by his way of eating.
Well, I don't know how it is over there where you are, but I know that the majority of the Americans constantly eat too much white flour, too much salt, too much sugar. So I would think that it would be more important for at least the people who do that to drink more quantities, because
we
don't really have healthy diets over here.
No, it's the same here.
McDonald's.
But probably we eat less sugar than you and probably less meat, but otherwise it's nearly the same, yeah.
Are all waters the same? Is there a better kind or is there a worse kind?
Well, here in Switzerland, we've got mountains. Well, you've got some too. And the water generally, the tap water is quite good.
Not over here.
Not over here.
You
yeah, that's what I
would be shocked if you... I have a water filter on my whole house.
Yes.
And you would be shocked what I see in my water filter when I change it.
Yeah.
It would disgust you.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's not really too good. In some countries here in Europe, too, it's water isn't too good. The idea is that the water is water, but in water there are minerals, but also different kind of poisons and different things which are in the water. So if someone drinks every day a lot of water, which is full of minerals are good, but which are have other products which are not so good, which come from the pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Cadmium or sulfur and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then it will not be very good for his body. But the general idea is that if the water is filtered or is very pure, not too rich in solid matters in it, I mean minerals and other products, the better it is. The purer it is, the better it will be for the body, because that water will be able to take our toxins and carry them outside of the body. But if the water is already saturated with things, then it cannot carry much and will not eliminate as much. So I think the idea of having a filter at the entry of the house, of the water system, or filtering water in different ways is a good system. From that point of view, to help the body detoxicate, eliminate the toxins.
Someone said to me the other day, if we in America anyway, a lot of people have really gone to bottled water.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, you know, there are a couple of different kinds. There's the distilled water,
yeah.
Then there's the purified water, then there's the spring water. And so someone said to me, if you're going to buy water, you should be buying the spring water. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, I think nature gives us spring water, and it's good. It's good water for us, as long as it's not polluted on the way somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Filtering water is drinking water which is not quite natural, because you've taken out quite a lot of things. But it's a solution when for nowadays, because we eat too much and so forth, and can help the body. Distilled water is a bit frightening for us here in Europe. Nobody drinks distilled water here. The general idea we've got is that it's really too purified. It's too much. We only use it for machines.
It doesn't have any minerals in distilled water.
No, it doesn't.
Does it?
No. So the thing which could happen if someone drank a lot of it, from my point of view, is that this body will take toxins from our body, but also maybe a few minerals which are good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of bringing minerals like source water, it will take some which is not good at on the long run.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think people should understand about water is, first of all, I have two questions for you here. How can you tell when you're dehydrated? And then can you tell us, you know, we're electrical beings, basically, a human body is, you know. So our autonomic nervous system and our blood pressure, I mean, it's not going to work right if we don't have enough of that water, is
no.
it? I mean, because electricity kind of requires the water to make the body work, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. The way to know if someone is drinking too little is that he will be thirsty. That's the natural signal which is given by the body. But the problem is that some people don't drink enough, and the body gives the signal, they're thirsty, but they don't listen to it, they don't drink. They'll eat instead, for example. And after a certain time, then the body doesn't give the signal anymore. And you can meet people who drink very little and say, I'm never thirsty. And it's true, they're never thirsty, because the body doesn't give the signal anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting to see that when you talk to someone and explain that it would be good that they drink 2.5 liters or 3 liters a day, and they do it, they follow your advice, that after a few days they will tell you, it's strange. Well, first they'll say, I feel much better. But the second thing, which is strange, they say, I'm always thirsty. And it's because they give the water again to their body, and the body acknowledges the fact and gives the signal when they need more water. So when they didn't drink anything, they weren't thirsty, but now that they drink more, the signal is given again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would imagine if you don't have enough water that some of the health problems that could result would be probably, you know, heart problems and fatigue and sensory
yes.
problems, because it can't get the signal without the water to carry it and the electrolytes, wouldn't it?
No, yeah, exactly, yeah. And here we've got to talk about the enzymes again. Enzymes are those small workers which are everywhere in the body and which are busy with all the biochemical changes which are necessary for the cells and organs to function. And those small workers are like us. They need a good, a healthy environment to work. But when someone doesn't drink enough, there's not enough liquid in the body, and all those enzymes and toxins are all in a space which is too small for all of them, and it's too crowded to give the picture, and they can't work as well as they should. So they work in a slower manner, and they are less efficient, and so forth. So the energy production is lower, and the transformation of certain substances to build new ones
mm-hmm.
is not done as well as it should, and the defense of the body are not so good, and so forth. All the metabolism are perturbated by all those, by this lack of water.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a fire without enough oxygen. It can't burn. But as soon as the person drinks more for several days, he will see that he will have more energy, and that's a sign that the enzyme has been able to work in a more efficient way and are producing more energy.
Are there any diseases or illnesses or health problems that are directly related to not enough water or dehydration?
Yes. Well, tiredness, when people are very tired and always lack of energy, and also all those problems related to elimination of toxins, like joint problem, arthritis, and mm-hmm. kidney problems, and cystitis, because water takes toxins out of the body, but if there's not enough water, the urine, for example, will be too thick, will not flow correctly, and there will be deposits, and then the microbes come, and you've got infection on the urinary tract,
mm-hmm.
for example. That's one of the possibility. Another is that the person will take a weight. How do you say? Will get fat, will be overweight because of a lack of water. And that seems a bit strange, but it can be explained like that. When the body needs water, usually the signal is, I'm thirsty, and the person should drink. But some people don't interpret the signal correctly. Instead of saying, I'm thirsty, they think, I'm hungry. And so they will eat instead of drinking. And it will calm their thirst, because in food there's usually some water, so they've got the impression they've answered the correct signal. And when this is done all day long for weeks and months on one after the other, then the person is always eating instead of drinking. I mean, eating a lot instead of drinking. And that, of course, will help the person to put on weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so in such a case, one way of losing weight is to drink more and lots, because then all those false answer to the signals will fall out. The person won't eat as much because he will realize that he can drink, and that in fact he was thirsty, not hungry. And that will already be a good help to lose weight. And also drinking more gives a good environment from the enzymes, and they can work better, and the person, it's strange, but the person will lose weight if they drink more.
I would imagine it would significantly help blood pressure, too.
Blood pressure, yeah, uh-huh. Also, yeah.
Does it matter, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so.
Does it matter, does tea and soft drinks count to hydration?
Yeah, they count, but not much, shall we say. Of course, water is the best liquid we can drink. That's the liquid nature gave us to drink, so water is the best. If it's water with a little something in it, like if you do an infusion with herbal tea, herbal plants, medicine plants, that's fine also because there's nothing much added to the water. But as soon as you drink, like, let's say, coffee mm-hmm. or tea, then what happens? There are a lot of substances which are added, which have effects which are not good for hydrating, because there are a lot of toxins in coffee and tea, which the body has to get rid of. And to get rid of those toxins, he needs water. And so you drink something which needs water to be eliminated, so you don't take a lot of the advantage out of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with all the soft drinks, lemonades full of sugar and things like that. They're not good because too much sugar needs a lot of water to be eliminated, so you're not getting much with that. So the idea is water or herbal teas. Or it can also be a fruit juice and vegetable juices.
Would the would it matter that the drinks that have caffeine, doesn't that act as a diuretic, so it kind of makes you get rid of some of the water you just got through drinking?
Yeah, I forgot to say that. Coffee, tea, and other, everything with caffeine in it has a diuretic effect. That is, it helps the kidneys eliminate more water. So that goes directly in the opposite direction of what we want, to rehydrate the body in order to that it works in a more efficient way.
Should you drink with meals, or should you drink before meals or after meals? How should the consumption of food go with the
There's a general advice which is given that, some people say you shouldn't drink when you eat. But when we eat to digest, we produce digestive juices in large quantities. Every day it amounts to 8 or 9 liters, which are reabsorbed in the intestines, not to waste good things. But we've got to produce those juices. And they are liquid, so we need water for it. So it's typical of someone who's not drinking enough to start to eat and be very thirsty during the meal. Because he doesn't have enough liquid in the body, and he has to drink to be able to produce all the digestive juices. But someone who drinks enough will only drink little during the meals, especially if the foods are a bit too dry or solid. I mean, if you eat cereals or, I don't know, things like that, well, they're quite dry in a way, so you need to drink a bit of water to help you. Drinking too much water during a meal is not good because it will dilute the digestive juices, and they won't be as strong as they should be to be able to digest the foods.
So you should drink, how long should you wait after your meal before you drink it?
I think if you drink 1 hour after the meal, it's good. But in fact, it's better to drink before the meal.
Okay.
If the person drinks a big glass of water half an hour before the meal, he'll have an intake of water which will help him to produce the digestive juices.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, people that have thyroid issues, and I don't know if you know about this. Why does that make people, like a lot of people that have thyroid issues, wake up thirsty in the middle of the night?
When it's in hyperthyroid, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, in this condition, the whole body is functioning at a very high rate. It's functioning much more quickly. Everything, so the person burns more energy and breathes a bit in a faster way, more deeply. The blood is circulating also more quickly, and he's eliminating more, sweating more. Everything is more intense. Everything is more intensive in his body. So he loses more water, and he's got to replace it, and therefore he will need to drink even during the night.
I wasn't sure if that was like a fault signal because something was wrong with the thyroid, or if they really did need the more water.
From what I understand, they need more water because they use more.
I'm curious. I just have to ask you this question. You may not even know about it. Are you familiar with Bill Tiller's work?
No. What is his work?
Well, he did this experiment with intention. He was at the University of Stanford in California. He was the chairman of the engineering department or physics department or something. Anyway, he did some experiments with water and the pH in the water using an intention carrier machine. He shipped two jars of water from California to a lab somewhere on the East Coast. And he placed an intention on one jar of the water that one jar would raise pH by one entire point. And then he did another one where he placed an intention that the pH would lower by one entire point. And both times, with just intention, the pH in those jars went up one point and down one point. And he was on the other side of the country when it happened.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
It is, yeah, yeah.
Had you heard about that?
I heard of similar experiences where people change the energy level of the water. There's a lot of people working on that to get better water or water with better, more energy in it. And there are many different systems. It adds something of quality to the water.
Have you seen any results from that?
Well, some people say, usually, as I said, here in Switzerland we've got quite good water, so if people drink more, it helps a lot. But what I've read is that people who drink more, but also water which has been energized in a certain way, feel very much better. So it's something which could be a plus. Yeah.
I've got one more question, and we've got about 3 minutes. You talk about the wet-dry detoxification remedy. Can you tell us about that?
The
wet-dry detoxification.
It's a way of getting rid of a lot of toxins. If someone doesn't drink, it starts with the dry part. The person doesn't drink much, and every of the liquids in the body get thicker. And then this cure is followed for one day, 24 hours, for example. Mm-hmm. And then the person drinks a lot of water in a short time, so a few liters in 1 or 2 hours. And the body is suddenly traversed by this stream of water, and it will make a big pressure on the tissues, on the kidneys, and take the toxins out of the tissues, and then the toxin will be eliminated out of the body. It's in relation with osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
If one side of the membrane is with a liquid which is very pure, it will attract the toxins which are the other side of the membrane. That's a way of doing it, following this cure.
So you would drink like 1 or 2 liters in a period of just 2 or 3 hours?
Yes.
And how often would you do that?
Not too often. It's quite a strong process. But maybe once a month would be a good...
Should you put anything in it, like the lemon juice that we were talking about earlier?
No, I wouldn't. Just water is enough. It's the question of the osmotic pressure you get by drinking suddenly a lot of water after not having drank any. Yeah.
Now, I just want to suggest to everybody, we're at the end of the show now, that both of these books, The Water Prescription and The Acid Alkaline Diet, you should really take a look at it because it's two really good books. If you could say one thing to the world, Dr. Bassey, that you thought would or could make a difference, what would that be?
I think it would make everybody more healthy if they drank enough water and water which was clean. So on the one hand, we've got to be careful not to pollute our water by our way of living. And on the other hand, we've got to drink more water, which makes us more healthy. And when someone is more healthy, he's got more love to give to the other people.
That's right. Thank you for being willing to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be with us.
That is a pleasure.
I appreciate it. You did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Yes, sure.
Good night.
Bye.